Next, we come to St. Jerome. St. Jerome lived from 347 to 420 and is considered the greatest biblical scholar in the early church. He was responsible for translating the Bible into Latin. His monumental work is called the Vulgate. In his letter to Pope Damasus 15:2, written 374, he says this, quote, "As I follow no leader save Christ, so I communicate with none but your blessedness, that is, with the chair of Peter. For this I know is the rock upon which the church is built. This is the house where alone the paschal lamb can rightly be eaten. This is the ark of Noah, and he who is not found in it shall perish when the flood prevails." End quote. St. Jerome, the father of biblical scholarship, indicates that the Bishop of Rome is the successor to St. Peter, the rock of the church. He also makes it clear that no one can be saved who is outside the church, which is led by the Bishop of Rome. The First Council of Constantinople. The next event we must look at in the 4th century is the First Council of Constantinople. This council is regarded as the second general or ecumenical council of the Christian Church. Keep in mind that the evidence for papal and Roman primacy at the first 7 ecumenical councils is especially significant in proving Catholic teaching on the papacy. It's especially significant because the so-called Eastern Orthodox and many Protestants accept these 7 councils. Now, there are some among the so-called Eastern Orthodox who say that the primacy of the Bishop of Rome was only recognized because Rome was the capital of the empire. In other words, according to them, the Bishop of Rome had the primacy not because he was the successor to St. Peter's authority, but simply because he was located in the most important political city in the empire. The Emperor Constantine moved the capital of the empire from Rome to Byzantium in 330 AD. And he renamed Byzantium after himself, Constantinople. So, according to some non-Catholics, when the capital was moved to Constantinople, Constantinople then took over the place of most important episcopal chair. This claim of the so-called Eastern Orthodox has already been refuted by many of the points covered so far, which show that the authority of the Bishop of Rome was of divine origin, but it's important to keep in mind what these people claim when considering the following canon. The First Council of Constantinople took place in 381. It states in Canon 3, quote, "The Bishop of Constantinople, however, shall have the prerogative of honor after the Bishop of Rome, because Constantinople is New Rome." End quote. This canon says that Constantinople shall have the honor after Rome, because Constantinople is New Rome. Now, the first point that needs to be understood about the First Council of Constantinople is that this was a council which was originally regarded as a regional council. It was not called as an ecumenical or universal council. It only had 150 bishops from the East. It was a regional council which was later recognized as ecumenical at the Council of Chalcedon in 451. Every scholar who studies or writes on this period agrees with this. Therefore, the fact that the Bishop of Rome was not involved in the First Council of Constantinople doesn't detract in any way from papal primacy. But notice that even at this council, which began as regional, we see again the primacy of the Bishop of Rome. We see that the Bishop of Constantinople is given a new scope of authority, exceeding that which it previously had, but authority which is still second to the Bishop of Rome. In the canon, we do see the tendency to want to elevate the jurisdiction of Constantinople because of its new important position in the empire. This was a tendency which plagued many in the East for centuries. This became known as Caesaropapism, in which the spiritual authority of the church was subordinated to the secular authority. This heretical tendency in the East caused it to fall prey repeatedly to the heretical whims of emperors. In the East, they frequently dominated the affairs of the church and influenced its arrangement. This tendency enabled heresies to flourish in the East for many centuries. But if, as some of the so-called Eastern Orthodox say, the primacy of the Bishop of Rome were simply due to the fact that he stood at the center of the empire, why would this Canon 3 of Constantinople I still recognize Rome as superior to Constantinople in 381? After the capital had already been transferred to Constantinople? The fact that even this canon places the Bishop of Rome ahead of the Bishop of Constantinople shows us again that the Church of Rome's superior authority is not tied to any political arrangement, but to the apostolic authority of Peter, which derives from Jesus Christ. Further, it must be pointed out that the popes, in approving things from councils, did not always approve every canon which these councils promulgated. In the case of the First Council of Constantinople, the monumental creed on faith which it promulgated was eventually accepted as dogmatic by the whole church, but not all of its canons. Here is what the famous Henry Percival, who prepared the notes in Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers' second series, had to say about this Canon 3 of Constantinople. Keep in mind that he was not a Catholic. Quote, "It should be remembered that the change effected by this Canon 3 did not affect Rome directly in any way, but did seriously affect Alexandria and Antioch, which till then had ranked next after the See of Rome. When the Pope refused to acknowledge the authority of this canon, he was in reality defending the principle laid down in the Canon of Nicaea. Even the last clause of the canon, it would seem, could give no offense to the most sensitive of papal claims." End quote. So the canon of this council gives no offense to Catholic truth on the papacy, but rather shows us again that the Bishop of Rome's primacy was recognized by the whole church. The Council of Ephesus. We must now move to the 5th century, to the Third Ecumenical Council, to the Council of Ephesus in 431. The acts of the Council of Ephesus clearly show that the primacy and supreme jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome was recognized by all. The Council of Ephesus was held in the East, and the reigning pope at the time was Pope Saint Celestine. The following quotes and facts from the Acts of the Council can again be found in a version of the Councils which is sold by Eastern Orthodox seminaries, the Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers' Second Series. In Session 1 of Ephesus, the Council says that it has been compelled to condemn the heretic Nestorius by the canons and by, quote, "our most holy father, Celestine, Bishop of Rome." In Session 2 of Ephesus, mention is made of the letters of Pope Celestine, quote, "Bishop of the Apostolic See, which have been brought by us, from which your reverence will be able to see what care he has for all the churches," end quote. So we see an acknowledgement that the Bishop of Rome has care for all the churches. In the letter of the Pope which was read in Session 2, we see that he commands the council, quote, "We have sent our holy brethren, that they may be present at what is done and may carry out what things have already been decreed by us, to the performing of which we have no doubt that your holinesses will assent, when it is seen that what has been decreed is for the security of the whole church." After that, numerous bishops spoke in acknowledgement of Celestine's decree. In Session 3 of Ephesus, we read the statement of Philip, the legate of Celestine. This statement, which is contained in the Acts of Ephesus, really needs little commentary. It's a striking proof of Catholic teaching on the papacy and the Bishop of Rome. Quote, "There is no doubt, and in fact it has been known in all ages, that the holy and most blessed Peter, prince and head of the apostles, pillar of the faith and foundation of the Catholic Church, received the keys of the kingdom from our Lord Jesus Christ, the Savior and Redeemer of the human race, and that to him was given the power of loosing and binding sins, who down even to today and forever lives and judges in his successors. The holy and most blessed Pope Celestine, according to his due order, is his successor and holds his place, and us he sent to supply his place in this holy synod." End quote. Keep in mind that the so-called Eastern Orthodox and many Protestants accept the Council of Ephesus. And these people have the audacity to say that the primacy of the Bishop of Rome wasn't acknowledged in the East or in the early church. This is pure nonsense, as we see here. This statement shows that it was acknowledged right in the Acts of Ephesus that the Pope holds the place of Peter, which is a primacy of jurisdiction over the universal church. In the same session, Cyril, Bishop of Alexandria, who played a huge role at the council and in refuting and condemning Nestorius, stated this, quote, "Wherefore let those things which were defined by the most holy Celestine, the God-beloved bishop, be carried into effect, and the vote cast against Nestorius the heretic," end quote. The Council of Chalcedon. We must now move to the Fourth Ecumenical Council, the Council of Chalcedon. This council took place in 451, when Pope Leo the Great was the Bishop of Rome. One could argue that this council was the most important of all in the early church, for it condemned the Monophysite heresy. This heresy taught that Jesus Christ is one person with one divine nature. The Council of Chalcedon, in contradicting this heresy, asserted the pure truth about the person of our Lord Jesus. It taught that he is one person with two natures, divine and human. Like the councils before it, the acts of this council also prove the primacy and supreme jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome. In Session 1 of Chalcedon, the Bishop of Rome is described as, quote, head of all the churches, end quote. In the same session, a bishop spoke of one who, quote, dared to hold a synod without the authority of the Apostolic See, a thing which had never taken place nor can take place, end quote. Another bishop stated, quote, we cannot go counter to the decrees of Pope Leo, who governs the Apostolic See, nor against the ecclesiastical canons, nor the patristic traditions, end quote. In Session 2, the famous dogmatic letter of Pope Leo to Flavian was read. This is one of the most famous and important documents in the early Church. After it was read at the Council, more than 600 fathers stood up and, according to the Acts, stated, quote, this is the faith of the fathers, this is the faith of the apostles. Peter has spoken through Leo, end quote. The whole Council of Chalcedon thus acknowledged that Leo was Peter's successor, the apostle who governed the flock of Christ. In Session 3 of Chalcedon, Peter is called the rock and foundation of the Catholic Church in the context of speaking of Pope Leo. Quote, wherefore the most holy and blessed Leo, Archbishop of the great and elder Rome, through us and through this present most holy synod, together with the thrice blessed and all-glorious Peter, the Apostle, who is the rock and foundation of the Catholic Church and the foundation of the Orthodox faith, hath stripped him, Dioscorus, of his episcopate, end quote. In Session 4 we read this striking statement, quote, the writings of that blessed man Leo, Archbishop of all the churches, end quote. So the Bishop of Rome is described as the Archbishop of all the churches, showing that the Pope has a universal jurisdiction. In Session 16, Pascasinus read out his understanding of Canon 6 of the Council of Nicaea, according to which, quote, the Roman Church hath always had the primacy, end quote. So the Acts of Chalcedon state that Canon 6 of Nicaea teaches that the Roman Church hath always had the primacy. Keep in mind that this council is accepted by the so-called Eastern Orthodox and by many Protestants. So, just like the previous councils, we see that the Acts of the Council of Chalcedon repeatedly demonstrate that Pope Leo was recognized as the supreme bishop, the one with universal jurisdiction as the successor of St. Peter. But there is a canon from Chalcedon which must be addressed. This is the notorious Canon 28. Protestants and some so-called Eastern Orthodox attempt to use this Canon 28 to argue against the papacy. Canon 28 from Chalcedon states this, quote, we do also enact and decree the same things concerning the privileges of the Most Holy Church of Constantinople, which is New Rome. For the fathers rightly granted privileges to the throne of Old Rome because it was the royal city, and the 150 most religious bishops gave equal privileges to the Most Holy Throne of New Rome, justly judging that the city is honored with the sovereignty and the Senate, and enjoys equal privileges with the old imperial Rome. End quote. This Canon 28 was rejected by the Pope because it attempted to elevate the See of Constantinople to the same status as the See of Rome. This elevation contradicted tradition and the past canons, such as Canon 6 of Nicaea. This canon also states a blatant falsehood when it states that its decree is in line with the Canon of Constantinople. Canon 3 of Constantinople 1 clearly stated that Constantinople was after Rome. This canon also seems to say that Rome possessed its jurisdiction because it was the royal city, which is patently false. As the supreme bishop in the Church, the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, had the authority to reject certain canons and to reject councils. That is exactly what popes had done with other false councils and with certain portions of other true councils. As we will see, even the Patriarch of Constantinople acknowledged Pope Leo's authority to reject this canon. The non-Catholic scholar Henry Percival noted the following about this Canon 28, quote, "We need not stop to consider the question why Leo rejected the 28th Canon of Chalcedon. It is certain that he rejected it. His rejection of the canon was absolute and unequivocal." End quote. The Bishop of Constantinople at the time of the Council of Chalcedon was Patriarch Anatolius. Anatolius, therefore, was the one whose prestige would have been enhanced by this Canon 28. But here is what Anatolius wrote to Pope Leo about the canon after the council, quote, "As for those things which the Universal Council of Chalcedon recently ordained in favor of the Church of Constantinople, let your holiness be sure that there was no fault in me. It was the most reverend clergy of the Church of Constantinople who were eager about it, and they were equally supported by the most reverend priests of those parts, who agreed about it. Even so, the whole force of confirmation of the acts was reserved for the authority of your blessedness. Therefore, let your holiness know for certain that I did nothing to further the matter, knowing always that I held myself bound to avoid the lusts of pride and covetousness." End quote. Patriarch Anatolius of Constantinople to Pope Leo, Epistle 132, found in Ming, Latin Fathers, Volume 54, 108-2. This is fascinating. It refutes any argument against the papacy from this canon. For here we have the Patriarch of Constantinople acknowledging that the Pope had the power to approve or reject these acts. Anatolius further reveals that this canon was basically thrust forward by ambitious people at Constantinople, where the imperial power resided. It was those with secular interests at heart who tried to thrust this canon forward, as sort of a last-ditch effort to increase their scope of influence over ecclesiastical affairs. We've already mentioned that this was a tendency in the East, a tendency which led the East into many heresies. But the canon was rejected by the Pope and, as Pope Leo XIII noted in his encyclical Satis Cognitum, 1896, is therefore admitted by all to be worthless. That Leo's rejection of the canon had real force is shown not only from Anatolius's words, but even from Eastern historians from the 6th century, such as Dionysius Exiguus, Theodore the Lector, and John Scholasticus. They all speak of 27 canons of Chalcedon, which demonstrates that it was held that canons which were not approved by the Pope are not binding. So contrary to the claims of non-Catholics, this incident highlights once again the supreme jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome. It does reveal that there was a tendency among many in the East, which continued to crop up from time to time, to want to deviate from the God-given authority of the Bishop of Rome for selfish or secular reasons. But this effort was rejected by the Pope and therefore not considered binding. Further, we cannot forget all of the clear statements in the Acts of Chalcedon which we've covered, which testify to the supreme authority of the Bishop of Rome. We've covered how Chalcedon referred to the Bishop of Rome's position as, quote, head of the churches, etc. It's also interesting to note that in his letter 93, Pope Leo wrote to the Council of Chalcedon. He told them through his legates that he is, quote, presiding at the council. That can be found in Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers, Second Series, Volume 12, page 70. Leo simply declared that they would preside at the council, and that's the position his legates held. All of this also reminds us how Catholic councils are approved. It reminds us that in Catholic teaching there exists a consistent framework which enables one to determine which councils are binding and which ones aren't. In so-called Eastern Orthodoxy, where all bishops are considered equals, there is no such framework, as we will see. Since we're on the topic of the Bishop of Rome's authority to reject canons, we must now move back just a bit to Socrates Scholasticus. Socrates Scholasticus was a historian in the East who lived from 380 to 450. This Socrates is not to be confused with the Greek philosopher who lived before Christ. This Socrates wrote a famous ecclesiastical history from this period. In his Ecclesiastical History 2:8, he says this, quote, "An ecclesiastical canon commands that the churches shall not make any ordinances against the Bishop of Rome," end quote. Quote found in Nicene and Post-Nicene Fathers, Second Series, Volume 2, page 38. So think about this. This is a historian from the East. He therefore had no motive to exaggerate the authority of the Bishop of Rome, and he says that an ecclesiastical canon commands that no one shall make an ordinance contrary to the Bishop of Rome. So we can see how the very authority which enabled Pope Leo the Great to reject Canon 28 of Chalcedon was recognized in the East prior to that council. Socrates further speaks of the unique authority of the Bishop of Rome in Ecclesiastical History 2:15, quote, Athanasius laid his case before Julius, Bishop of Rome. Julius, on his part, by virtue of the Church of Rome's peculiar privilege, sent them back again into the East, fortifying them with commendatory letters, and at the same time restored to each his own place, and sharply rebuked those by whom they had been deposed. Relying on the signature of the Bishop Julius, the bishops departed from Rome, and again took possession of their own churches. End quote. We must now move to another church historian of the same period, Sozomen. Sozomen was a church historian from Palestine. He was therefore from the East. He was also a lawyer. He died in the middle of the 5th century. In his Ecclesiastical History 3:8, we clearly see the supreme jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome acknowledged by this Eastern historian. Quote, the Roman bishop, on learning the accusation against each individual, admitted them to communion as of like orthodoxy, and as the care for all was fitting to the dignity of his see, he restored them all to their own churches. He wrote to the bishops of the East, and rebuked them for having judged these bishops unjustly. He summoned a few of them to appear before him on an appointed day, and threatened to bear with them no longer. Athanasius and Paul were reinstated in their respective sees, and forwarded the letter of Julius to the bishops of the East. End quote. So we see that Sozomen speaks of the care for all which was fitting for the dignity of the Bishop of Rome, meaning that his office gives him care of the whole flock. He further acknowledges that the Bishop of Rome restored Eastern bishops to their sees and rebuked those in the East who had dealt with them unjustly.